You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily podcast on the Minnesota Timberwolves, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Welcome, 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 ladies and gentlemen, to another Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. As always, your host here, Cole Molesky, bringing you daily Timberwolves content. Make sure to check out the Locked On Wolves FanRag website for written content as well as prior podcasts. We've had some great guests on, and I would encourage you to give those shows either a listen or re-listen to some of those shows. Really good content on the past podcasts over the last few months. Today, we are recapping the Timberwolves' 121-105 victory over the Houston Rockets in the Target Center in Minneapolis in Game 3. They will be playing Game 4 tonight, Monday the 23rd. We'll be talking about that as well. Here to break down all the action with us, Ben DuBose of the Locked On Rockets podcast. First of all, Ben, what are your reactions from Game 3? The Timberwolves actually were able to grab a game in this series after a really terrible showing in Game 2. What are your thoughts and what was your initial response to the game dropped by Houston?
Mostly disappointed, certainly impressed by the Timberwolves, but you've heard going into the Game 3 that the Rockets understood the sense of urgency that the Timberwolves would be playing with, the intensity of the crowd, all those types of things, and ultimately the Rockets just didn't match it. Look, the Timberwolves played really well. There's a lot of talent. But the flip side is you don't go from what the Rockets did defensively in Game 2 when they limited Minnesota to just 82 points, 35 in the middle two quarters, and then that 52-20 run to giving up 121 just based on what the opponent does. It's also somewhat what you do or don't do when the swing is that wild. And ultimately, the Timberwolves made some shots. That's great. But the Rockets, they treated the game exactly like they said they wouldn't, which was that they had one to throw away, and that's dangerous in a playoff series. And so it's going to be a big challenge tonight to see if they match the urgency that the Timberwolves played with, because ultimately, you know, some of the stuff the Rockets struggled with, they're going to make more shots at some point this series. Eric Gordon is going to get going, that sort of stuff. But the thing that's really troubling, all of Game 3 and parts of Game 1, the dribble penetration, it feels like no one is able to consistently stay in front of Jeff Teague, Derrick Rose, the collapses of defense. That's what leads to so many, not just threes, but wide open threes. Even though Timberwolves are not known as a three-point shooting team, if you're getting looks that are wide open, it's going to be a problem. So ultimately, part of it's physical. The Rockets need to find the right matchups, especially for those guards. But secondly, I mean, it's just a matter of intensity. The Wolves wanted it more in Game 3, and hopefully here on the Rockets side of the fence, it's a wake-up call that Houston sees the energy they need to play with, which is what they showed in Game 2, and absolutely did not, the complete opposite in Game 3.
Harden with 29 points in this one. He looked really good late in this game, kind of still keeping the Rockets hanging around. The lead was as big as 19 for the Minnesota Timberwolves, and it's crazy to think, but Harden is so good. Even when they're up by 19, I was still nervous because James Harden still can do James Harden things in this game. Although the rest of the roster didn't really play up to expectations, I think that they had set for themselves over the regular season. You had Chris Paul with 17 points. He shot 63% from the field. You had Eric Gordon. He had 15. First really signs of life from him. He shot 31%, took a lot of shots, 16 in this game. I guess what this leads up for to me is, is it a concern yet that for the Houston Rockets, it doesn't really seem like they've had more than maybe three guys really involved in a game yet this series?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's been a while, and that's been the theme of Mike D'Antoni's discussion between games, is they're trying to get back to where they were offensively over the balance of 82 games. They're one of the best in NBA history, and they still haven't found that. Now, they always say, you know, why not start today, and they'll try, but ultimately, down the stretch of the regular season, they clinched the number one seed with seven games still to play. The last seven games of the season, the offense definitely took a dip, and they've improved a little bit this series, but certainly not to where it was the first 75 games of the year. So it's a concern. I guess the good news for the Rockets is that they did score 30 in the fourth quarter. I thought they got going more offensively. I really thought that the defining sequence of Game 3, to me, there's a stretch early in the fourth quarter, you mentioned the Timberwolves got that 19-point lead, and the Rockets hit him with a quick burst to get it back down to 9. And a lot of us in Houston thought, okay, this is when they flip the switch. And then as soon as they did that, Minnesota went on the 9-0 run, pushed it right back out to 18. I think Butler had a play in there. I believe Carl Anthony Towns had a three-point play. Jeff Teague might have as well. I forgot the third player in that trifecta. But what it showed me is that Minnesota is good enough offensively. There's enough talent that if you're the Rockets, you can't dig these big deficits and then just think that, well, even with our offense, when we flip the switch, which, again, they had 30-plus in the fourth quarter of game three, that's progress. But even so, I mean, Minnesota has enough talent that it's not like you can just expect to hold them to, say, 15 points in a quarter if that's what you need to do. So I think it's a combination. The Rockets need to be better offensively. I think the key for them, as we said in the early going, is Eric Gordon, because you need more consistency outside of James Harden and Chris Paul. Eric Gordon's kind of their third creator on the season. He hasn't been there this series. Shooting is 28% on the series. They need more from him. And then in general, they just need to take the game more seriously from the outset, because I think what game three shows you is that if you dig yourself a big hole, it's pretty challenging, because even if you do turn it on offensively late, it's problematic, because Minnesota is not an easy team to lock up just based on how many quality players there are on the Wolves roster.
On the flip side of this, everything really that has been a complaint on the Timberwolves side kind of flipped the switch. They changed gears. They did a lot better job fixing the mistakes that you saw in the first two games. Towns with more shots. He had 13 attempts. Lots of those inside. He only took two three-point attempts, and he had a lot of shots inside, which resulted in a lot of trips to the free throw line. He had 7 attempts from the free throw line, made all of them. He ended with 18 points, 16 boards. Just a lot more paint play for him. I wanted to get to Wiggins and Butler as well, but what were your thoughts from Towns? Is this maybe the scariest possible outcome, is that Butler looks like he's healthy at the same time that they're actually getting Towns more involved in the game plan?
Sure. I mean, I've said on Twitter, my feed at Denji Bones, that Minnesota, to me, is, when they're right, as good as any, perhaps better, non-Golden State playoff team in the West. Really, you look at this season, Minnesota was a 3 or 4 seed most of the way until Jimmy got hurt. So with Butler healthy, scoring 28 the other night and moving well, and I know he rolled the ankle, but at least the meniscus seems to be behind him. They're a daunting team, and so that's why I tell Rockets fans, I know there's an 8 by their name, but realistically, Minnesota, they're as talented, perhaps even more so, than whoever you might play in the second round, meaning Utah or Oklahoma City. Minnesota can be a very good team. As far as Carl Anthony Towns, it didn't surprise me that much. I think this matchup of young bigs, Capella and Carl Anthony Towns, it's the type of setting where both of those guys tend to play a lot better at home. They're both very, very good. I wouldn't necessarily call them true, you know, top 10 stars, but they're very good, and so they're kind of the quintessential young guys in their low 20s. Capella in his second playoff run as a starter, Cat in his first. I think both those guys, they kind of feed off the home crowd, so it doesn't surprise me too much. I don't know if it's so much a tactical adjustment that Tom Thibodeau made, or as I think it's just easier for Carl Anthony Towns to kind of filter out the noise and keep pushing when he's got that crowd behind him. Also, I think you probably get a few more favorable whistles when you're at home as opposed to on the road. That's just the way it works. So it didn't surprise me. Ultimately, it's up to Capella to adjust. The one thing that I did not like, as far as the Rockets side of the fence, Capella going 1 of 6 from the line. He's actually, since the beginning of March, it's kind of been under the radar. There's been a lot made this year of his improvement at the free throw line, but since the start of March, he's right at about 40%, which is not good at all, because A, it potentially brings Hacka Capella into the equation if there's a close game down the stretch. Mm-hmm. It's something that Thibodeau and other coaches, if the Rockets are fortunate enough to advance, can employ. And the other thing, Capella had just 7 points in game 3. I think part of it is he's not making his free throws, and the Rockets are going to be reluctant to even get him that many touches on the low block to begin with out of fear that he could be fouled. So I think it's one of those things. Capella missing his free throws on the road, Cat getting going. It's just something that happens with young players when you flip from a home playoff game to a road, in the Rockets' case, or road to home in the Timberwolves' case. And so ultimately, the Rockets saw what happened in game 3. It didn't work out for them, and now they've got to figure out a way to adjust in the hours before game 4 tonight.
That'll become, I think, increasingly more interesting story, too, if they're able to somehow pull off the Game 4 win. And then you have to, if you're Houston, you do have to head back to Minnesota for the Game 6.
For Game 6.
Yeah, it'll become interesting to see the flip of these young guys home versus away, and how that plays into a longer series than maybe a lot of people anticipated. Before we get to break here, I wanted to touch on one other thing. Jimmy Butler. I'm saying this is the first time he's looked healthy fully healthy in this series. Would you agree with that?
Somewhat. I think, I don't know how much of it is health and how much of it is more assertive, because to me, games one and two, it felt like he was moving slowly. He just looked a little timid. Whereas I think game three, I think Minnesota approached it with much more of a, we have nothing to lose. When you're down 2-0 and you're kind of at that point a wounded animal, you have to win. You have to go out guns blazing. I think the first two games, Minnesota was a little tentative. You know, maybe there are some injuries with that, but I didn't really see him limping all that much. I thought what it was more was just Minnesota trying, a young team getting their footing in the playoffs, trying to figure out what works, what doesn't. And in game three, you just kind of had a pedal to the metal. Look, this could be it. If we're going to go out, we're going to go out swinging. And so I think you just saw much more shot-happy Jimmy Butler, a guy who, you know, wasn't trying to tiptoe around. He was ready to shoot the ball, be aggressive, and if they lose, he wanted to go down swinging. And kudos to him. That's exactly what he did.
Well, I think, too, it might have been more, when I'm looking at his injury, I think it was more the wrist that might have been hampering him, especially in that game two. Because I feel like if Jimmy Butler really wants to take over a game, he's just going to do it regardless of maybe what the coach is saying. He knows how good of a player he is, and he can take over games. And so when he's only shooting like in game two 6 times, I think that is more to do with he doesn't trust his shooting form with that wrist the way it was, as opposed to him maybe following a certain game plan.
Yeah, I was thinking about the meniscus, but you're right. We did see the cameras capturing him with the wrist, the tape, that sort of thing. So, yeah, that's true. Yeah, he was moving well, because I think, Jeremy, the thing I'm watching the most is that meniscus after this couple of months. But, yeah, you're right. There could be, you know, it's all speculative because they've been kind of hush-hush about it. But, yeah, it could have been the wrist, too. You're right about that.
It was good to see him, whatever the case, it was good to see him put up 28 points and get the 7 boards, 5 assists. He shot 52%. I want to talk about a couple more things from this game before we get to some previewing for Game 4. First, a word from some sponsors. The Timberwolves take Game 3 by a score of 121-105. We just had a couple more things to touch on. First of all, I wanted to talk about Wiggins shooting 63% from the field. He went 4 of 6 from downtown, 20 points for him on the night, 5 and 5 for rebounds and assists. I think it was really crucial for him to hit the three-pointers early in this game. I think it's really crucial for Wiggins just to hit some big shots early in games to get him going. But then you had Jeff Teague going 3 of 5. You had Jimmy Butler going 4 of 6 as well from downtown. The knock has always been for the Timberwolves, not that you want a bunch of guys to shoot threes, you just want the right guys to take a few more three-pointers. And Teague, Wiggins, and Butler, to an extent, are all the guys that you want shooting a few more threes, and I think you saw them typically shoot, especially in this series. They hit as many threes as the Rockets did, 15 for each of these teams, 27 attempts from three-point range. For the Timberwolves, they shot 55% on the night. Really, really great game for the Timberwolves just because they're able to knock down some threes and then really work their game inside. If you're looking at the point guard play from the Timberwolves, Jeff Teague with the 23 points, you have Rose in 21 minutes. He gets 17 points, and he shoots 50%, does a really good job taking efficient shots for him. If these point guards continue to play like this, is this kind of the thing that could all fit together? You have Towns, he's feeling it a little bit at home. Great home atmosphere there. You have Jimmy Butler looking really healthy and taking more shots. And then if you're able to mix in some really good point guard play, is this now maybe the perfect storm for the Timberwolves to knock off the Rockets, or at least give them a really good challenge in Game 4?
Yeah, I think it's enough to give them a challenge, because the issue for the Rockets in this series, in my opinion, far and away, it's been dribble penetration. And then by that, I mean things they can control. Mm-hmm. Now, offensively, they've missed more shots than you'd like. Talked about Eric Gordon earlier. James Harden had a bad game two. Chris Paul had a bad game one. But all of that is generally random. Over the course of 7 games, the Rockets are going to make enough shots. In terms of what Minnesota is doing right, what's not just sheer randomness, it's that you're getting the three-point looks because those point guards are collapsing the Rockets' defense, and that's why there was a stat earlier today. I saw that the Timberwolves had just a ridiculous amount of wide open threes in Game 3, substantially more than what they had in Game 2, and it's because when Teague or Rose blow by the initial defender, then ultimately there's not a lot the Rockets can do other than send help, and you know they'll help off Wiggins, because over the balance of his career, maybe that's the guy you want to help off of, but he's still proven capable
of hitting that shot, as evidenced by 4 of 6 in game 3. As far as Houston is concerned, it's interesting because I didn't necessarily know it at the time, but the way it's playing out, this series, they are really missing Luke Bamute a lot. Because when you look at the Rockets, as far as perimeter defenders, there's not a whole lot of quickness. Trevor Ariza and P.J. Tucker, they're good defensive guys, but they're more tough. You know, they're more physical.
Yeah.
Of course, they start at the forward spot, but these are guys in their 30s. You know, they can cover a guard on a switch here and there, but you don't want to just – it's unrealistic to expect them to pick up a guy like Jeff Teague who wants to always probe for 30-plus minutes a game. Chris Paul, he's okay at it, but Chris Paul is 32. He's more of a team defender in terms of his IQ. He does not move laterally the same way he did when he was 25.
Mm-hmm.
James Harden, there's been a lot made of James Harden's defensive improvement, but most of James Harden's defensive improvement is on the low block. He's a good low post defender. He's never been the quickest guy laterally. So there's not a whole lot the Rockets can do in the perimeter to stop the ball. That's where Luke Bamute comes in. He's probably the most flexible defender. He can move his feet well, and also he's very long. And so not having him to pick up those guards, I think that's something the Rockets are really feeling. And ultimately, he's close enough. He's been working out with the team. I think if the series went to 6 or 7 games, I think Bamute would come back this round, and ultimately he could make a difference. But it's one of those things, the Rockets don't want to rush him back, and if the Rockets have to go 6 or 7 games, even if they ultimately win the series, then it forces them to expend a lot more energy than they would have liked, and maybe to even risk further injury to Bamute with that dislocated shoulder that's now happened twice. So I think you're right. The Minnesota point guards, that's the thing to watch. The Rockets were decent at it at game 2. I never want to say they were great because it is a physical mismatch. But game 3, yeah, those Minnesota point guards, they just collapsed the Houston defense, and there was just not a lot that the Rockets had to answer it. And it ended up happening. Of course, they scored a lot, but what it really led to was just a wide open three time and time again because it was just too easy for Minnesota to get right into the rim, and from there you collapse the whole defense, and we know what happens from there.
So in game 4, do you anticipate the Rockets to try and switch even more to try, because you said they have older guys who maybe aren't going to move laterally, keep up with a driving Teague or Derrick Rose. Do you expect them to maybe switch off of guys more so that you have guys hanging around the perimeter a little more and switch guys who would be on a driving Teague, switch off of them to get out to the perimeter faster? Or do you kind of bet that the Timberwolves, a not great 3-point shooting team, aren't going to hit that many threes in game 4?
Honestly, I think it's both. I mean, you have to hope that they're not going to shoot 15 to 27 again. I don't care if you're wide open or going against air. That's a pretty tough number. And so the Rockets are expecting some regression from behind the arc. And I think it's important to remember the Timberwolves were winning this game before they went on that big spree in the third quarter. In the fourth quarter. I think it could be misleading, the fixation on the 15 of 27. It's relevant because the Rockets did try to flip the switch in the fourth quarter, and ultimately them flipping the switch didn't matter because the Timberwolves answered with all those threes. But even before they hit that high volume, the Timberwolves were still winning this game oftentimes very comfortably by anywhere, I'd say, from 8 to 12 points. So while the three-point shooting is a part of the story, it's not the whole story. I do expect them to switch a whole heck of a lot, not necessarily to prevent the threes, because I think the Rockets, you know, they know they have to live with Minnesota shooting some of those. There's just too much talent otherwise. And I think the reason switching is important for the Rockets is because you don't want to tax any one defender too much. So I think that's why you'll see them switch and kind of go back and forth in terms of who's picking up who. I think in general, if you're asking guys like Trevor Ariza and P.J. Tucker to play extended time on the likes of Jeff Teague, Derrick Rose, whoever it may be, then I think the key is to make sure that you're not asking too much of any one player. So you might have, you know, Ariza do it for a few minutes. You might have Tucker do it for a few minutes. You might have Chris Paul do it for a few minutes. And, of course, it's going to vary based on exactly what the switches are. And occasionally you might have, you know, a Ryan Anderson type get moved on to someone. But in general, I think the key for the Rockets, as long as they don't have Bamute, is to just try and diversify their defenders as much as possible. And from there, I think maybe you can kind of collectively reduce that fatigue wall as best you can.
Well, and you mentioned how the 15 for 27 can grab eyes, but it's not the most important thing that the Timberwolves are doing. It just makes me think, it's so important when Jeff Teague and Derrick Rose drive to the basket because, and it's so important to have Towns in the paint because they're not necessarily looking to drive and kick it all the way out to the three-point line like I think you see the Rockets a lot of times are looking for. You see a lot from Rose and Teague where they're looking for Towns or Taj Gibson around the basket or in the paint or somewhere maybe in that 15-foot range. They're looking for to pitch it right to them, make that quick little pass to Towns when that defender is caught looking at Teague, looking inside at Teague. They'll make that short little pass, and they'll have Towns with enough space to make the 10-foot floater. And so the point guards for the Timberwolves do a great job of looking for the shooters who can make shots to their strength. They're not necessarily looking for a Jamal Crawford in the corner, even though he can knock down that shot. They're looking for Gibson and Towns to make that close, high-efficiency shot. And so that's something I thought you saw a lot in the third quarter, which is where they outscored Houston 35-24. And I think it's something, if you have Towns in the paint again in Game 4, I think it's something you could see again where you have Teague and Rose, two guys who combined for 10 assists in Game 3. I think those are the assists they're going to be looking for, especially coming out of the second quarter. If you can be within 3 points of the Rockets going into the half, and then you come out strong and you have a great game inside, which leads to shooting outside in the fourth quarter, I think that's really the setup that you and kind of the process of actions you're looking for if you're the Timberwolves.
Yeah, and I think that it's important also to make Capella respect Towns as a scorer, because I think what happened a lot in Game 1 and Game 2, as far as preventing those threes, you could also have Capella feel very free to sort of roam in some of these sequences, and because he's not that afraid of what Karl Anthony Towns is going to do. So I think if you get those big guys involved, it makes it harder for the bigs of Houston to come off and help a little bit more, because it makes them stay more aware of their guy. You know, Karl is only scoring 5 points in the game, which is just crazy in Game 2, and he's barely looking to shoot in the second half. And it makes it all the easier for, you know, as I said, some of the quickness issues for Houston guarding the point guards. Well, you can kind of have Capella in a free safety roaming role a little bit, whereas mm-hmm. I think you get those bigs involved. Not only, of course, does it make the offense more diverse, which oftentimes leads to more threes because there's more to account for, but you're also keeping, you know, I don't know if you call Capella an eraser, but he's extremely athletic. He's very smart. He's a very big part of Houston's defense. And so you're just keeping him a little more occupied than you did in the first two games when Cat's offense was just not there.
And again, the more decisions you're making a young guy like Capella make, like those, in a road game and maybe a setting where he's not as comfortable as he is in Houston, the better it is for the Timberwolves, especially late in that game. Before we head out here, last thing I wanted to ask you, worry scale from 1 to 10 for this, just this game, not the series. I'm not saying the Timberwolves are going to knock off the Houston Rockets in the series, but just Game 4, where's the worry scale at for the Rockets?
I'm going to say 5. I'm going to split the difference because I think it's kind of, I don't know, 50-50. I think part of what happened is certainly within the Rockets' control.
Mm-hmm.
They got fat and happy. They need to play harder. And defensively, some of the things go away if they just bring the intensity that they played with in Game 2. That will solve some of it. However, I don't think it solves all of it, because let's be real. It's not like the Rockets, everything went right for Minnesota, and they still won only by 3 or 4 points. No, Minnesota won pretty convincingly. They won by 16, and I believe it was in single digits one time in the fourth quarter. Minnesota was clearly the better team on Saturday. So I think the Rockets can and will adjust to make this close. And if it's close, you have to like the experience of the Rockets, guys like Chris Paul and James Harden down the stretch of the fourth quarter. But when you lose by 16 points, it's not all just try harder. Part of it is how talented Minnesota is. And especially if they're at home and you get Karl Anthony Towns going like he did and Jimmy Butler's healthy, they're a very good team. So ultimately, while I expect the Rockets to be better, and, you know, I would lean to them winning just because I think if it's close, I would go with the Rockets' experience executing the last 3 minutes of a close game, much the same way we saw happen in Game 1.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think there are some matchup things, especially stopping dribble penetration without Luka Amute. Those issues are real, and you don't lose by 16 points just based on a lack of effort on your end. You also lose because the other team is doing that well. So, you know, I wouldn't say the Rockets can't beat them. No, the Rockets certainly can beat them. But Minnesota, even if Houston is playing well, there's enough talent in Minnesota, especially at Target Center, that they can make it close. And at that point, you know, at the very least, it's making me sweat as a Rockets guy more than I expected walking out of Toyota Center after game two. Let's put it that way.
I like it, because after game one, the worry scale for game two for the Rockets was probably like a negative six. So I'll take a five. I'll take a 5 out of 10 for sure. I'm excited for this game. I think that the playoff atmosphere in Minnesota will match what it was in game three. I think that the fans were really hungry for this game and that the Timberwolves performed admirably in front of them and that they'll be behind the Wolves again in game four. Hopefully you can get Towns going early again. I think that he should stay in the paint. And I like that Rose is playing more with the starters, and I like the two guards set, and I like how they cut to the basket. I like Jimmy Butler playing really healthy, and I like Wiggins when he's shooting six times from three. I like all of it. It should be really fun. That's all you can really ask for. When your team hasn't been to the playoffs in 13 seasons, I just want a good series. So that's what it is now, I think, at 2-1 advantage Rockets. And I think going into game four, this could be a really fun game. And I think it'll make for a really great series down the stretch here. Thanks, Ben, for coming on. Check him out at Locked On Rockets. Also, check out his Twitter at Ben DeBose. Check out my Twitter at C Molesky. Check out the Locked On Wolves fan rag website. And thank you so much to the listeners for tuning into another Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast.